Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black radio networks that address issues and explore solutions for the black community. Presents Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by computer or laptop, you may dial 516-531-9540 if you have a comment or a question. The number again is 516-531-9540. And don't forget to press 1. Here's the lineup, our weekly lineup. Tonight, Black Urban America. I'm your host, Kenny Jones, co-host, Michonne Williams. On Wednesday night, we have The Cutting Edge with Michonne. On Thursday, we have the Port of Harlem Magazine show with Mr. Wayne A. Young. On Saturdays, finishing up the week, we have Provocative Thought with Carter Sneed. All shows begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, you know Black Urban America have shows that, or have guests that have judges, teachers, education, playwrights. We talk politicians. We talk many serious issues. But tonight we are going to move in a different direction. We're going to talk about something called intimacy with black love. Now, I'm not an expert on this subject, and I don't know if I've really been successful with this topic, with the subject, intimacy. But tonight we have an author who wrote Answers to Intimacy. And I'd like to welcome Ms. Troya Bishop. Welcome to Black Urban America, Ms. Bishop.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. And thank you so much for having me.
Yes, and welcome to the show. Well, first of all, I'd like to ask you, why did you choose this topic to write?
Well, actually, this topic came from other research that I had done. I've written several books already about racism. And while I was on tour, what I started to notice that came up as a theme in a lot of the talks from workshops and seminars and different radio shows and television shows was that racism was one of the main things that was causing problems in relationships, especially with black people. And so since I was working on my doctorate degree, I decided to use the databases that I had access to really do some real research to see what I could find. And I definitely found that there was we call it a direct positive correlation between racism and how black people are able to relate to one another in relationships. And so that's where it came from. And I know the subtitle is really catchy and some people are taken aback by it, but it you know, it's based on research. And, you know, and I love it.
Well, first of all, what is intimacy?
Intimacy is a deep connection between two people. It can be romantic, or it can be between a mom and their child, or two sisters or two brothers. Intimacy is a deep, deep connection. And unfortunately, in American culture, we interchange the word intimacy with sex, and that's a huge no-no. We shouldn't do that because intimacy and sex are not the same thing. Now, sometimes sex can be intimate, but often it's not. And so it's really important for us to make a distinction between the two.
Well, do you think the subject of intimacy is a taboo subject among blacks in America?
It is a taboo subject, and that's really sad, and it shouldn't be, because if nobody else needs love and connection, we do. But the need for intimacy is a human thing. And so regardless of your ethnic background, whether you're black or not, we all deeply, deeply desire to be connected to one another. And I think religion mainly, you know, is one of the biggest forces that kind of makes people feel ashamed and not even really want to to learn more about that deep connection. And so people are typically just confused because there's a lack of discussion about it. And that's why I really appreciate you having me on so we can have this discussion and talk more about it.
Well, why is religion so much of an issue or have issues with intimacy? You think that religion will encourage more connection between two people?
It could and it should, but what happens a lot, from my perspective, I think religion a lot of times is about rules and telling people what not to do and trying to control other folks and not necessarily encouraging connection and encouraging people to really discover who they are and to discover their own truth. It's about, or it can be about, just being controlling. And as somebody who was raised in the church, I know we didn't talk a lot about what intimacy is or what it means to really be connected. And intimacy was exchanged with the word sex. And so, and you know, we were kind of taught that sex was bad. So that means intimacy is bad. Well, what does that mean? And so it's a huge cloud around it. And, you know, I really do wish that more religious organizations, whether it's a mosque or a church or a synagogue or whomever, I really do wish that more people would be willing to at least have those conversations and to uncover how they can help their people be more connected. Because regardless of what your religion is, people across all faiths typically tend to divorce at the same rate and to lack intimacy and to show that they're lacking intimacy by their behavior in the same way. So it's really important for us to have that conversation.
Go ahead, Ms. Sean.
Okay. My first question is, while black women are trying to flourish, there is a crisis in the black community, a health crisis, an incarceration crisis, an education crisis, a violence crisis, et cetera, creating a disparity of available black men. So how can a black woman navigate this crisis?
That's a really good question. Well, I think the first thing we can do, and like you said, there is definitely a crisis in so many different areas. But the first thing that we really can do is just to kind of educate ourselves. And what I really encourage people to do with the book is to use it as a tool of self-discovery. And, for example, and let me just say also, I really think that a lot of people go into relationships first, whether, you know, you can even find somebody that's halfway decent or not. But I think a lot of times we are attracting the wrong people. And so I don't think that there's necessarily even a lack. I just think that we don't always attract who we should attract. And I think that being able to attract who you really want and deeply desire starts with self-discovery. And so I ask people to go on a journey of self-discovery and start by asking yourself about what your parents' relationship was like and ask different people that you know and go from there. Because what really happened is from the times that we were snatched off the shores of Africa all the way up until now, we as black people literally, and I don't mean this in a figurative way, we've been forced and taught to hate each other as black people. And so, and black women really did have to mentally separate ourselves from the men because we saw the horrors that were happening to them, and men were physically unable to be present with us and to have a deep, intimate connection. And so all the things you talked about really are wrapped up into racism. And so that's why I really urge people to let's look at the root causes of racism and address it as much as we can, especially mass incarceration, because that was something that we now know used to be a conspiracy theory, but now we know that where mass incarceration came from, it was intentional. And it was intentionally caused from the 13th Amendment. Slavery just changed forms. And so that wasn't a mistake or wasn't a mishap. That was intentional. And so it was intentional for us to be separated. And we really just have to continue to work on focusing on each other, being together, but doing that work first, like I said, doing that work first for yourself, figuring out who you are, why you are the way you are, what patterns you've observed in your family, and so on and so forth.
Okay. My next question is, why do men need oral sex?
Well, that's a great question. Basically what happens, like I said before, all people have a deep desire to connect. And what men need, and you can ask any man that you know, but scientifically men have a deep need to provide and to protect, those main two things. Now, if you look historically at African-American men, when have they just naturally been able to provide and protect, especially given the things that you just said in your last question, with what's happening with the economy and housing and not being able to find a job and, you know, even just being knowing that you could be shot dead in the street and there's nothing that you can do about it. So for the most part, the masculine part of a man, of a black man specifically, is eroded. He, in a lot of situations, he just doesn't have the ability to protect and to provide in a lot of places. So what we have to do is what happens with a man is, since they don't have the opportunity to do that in the physical realm, the only place that they can get that and feel powerful is in their home and in their bedroom. And if the other thing that goes with being able to protect and provide is being able to feel powerful. And on the other side of being able to feel powerful is someone who is willing to be vulnerable. And what is more vulnerable than a man and his wife and her being willing to be physically submitted to him in front of him on her knees, being willing to take him in without being too graphic? So that just to give you an idea of what mentally why men need oral sex. And the other thing I really want to say as a part of that is a lot of times people forget that for men and for women, your primary sex organ is your brain, not your genitals. That's where you experience pleasure or experience physical pleasures in your genitals, but it begins in your mind. And so, you know, like I was saying, with the man's need to provide, to protect, to feel powerful, all that stuff is directly connected to his sexuality. And so men, a lot of times, who deviate from the norm and are not able to experience that in a normal, healthy way, they molest because they want to feel powerful and they want to feel somebody that's vulnerable to them, or they rape and they want to feel powerful and they want to feel that somebody is vulnerable to them. And now those are sexual acts, but they're violent acts, and it's not about sex. It's about power. And so we have to really dissect the whole thing and look at it in a different way, because too often we are just looking at it from a perspective that's been convoluted and makes people to think and feel shame around it. But, I mean, that's a long answer. But
So is domestic violence. Domestic violence is a powerful controlling act by the perpetrator.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
It's communication. You said that it starts in the brain, or what have you. So can communication be a part of intimacy? And if it is, how so?
Absolutely. One thing that I share in the book, there's a wonderful guy by the name of Dr. Chapman, and he broke down, he's a psychiatrist, and over the years that he had been counseling married couples, he noticed certain themes. He broke those themes down, and it talks about different ways that people want to be loved. He calls them the love languages. And so for a lot of people, we call it, he calls it words of affirmation. For a lot of people, love means you have to tell me that you love me. That's words of affirmation. And so for other people like me, my love language is physical touch. You can tell me you love me all day, but I need for somebody to hold me, to hold my hand, to rub my back, rub my feet, things like that. And then another love language is acts of service. And that's when somebody feels loved, if somebody is washing the dishes for them or will wash their car or go to the store for them. And then the other one is gifts. Some people like receiving gifts. So, but you have to know that for yourself and be able to communicate those things. And so, but because we, a lot of times we don't even know, and we don't know that we don't know, and we don't have the opportunity to really sit down with ourselves and with our partners to have that conversation, we can't connect on the intimate level because that piece, that communication piece is missing. But what I will say is that when I gave the love languages test to my child, it totally changed our relationship because I thought that I was being the most wonderful parent in the world because we spent a lot of time together. And I hug her a lot. And, you know, and I thought that was, you know, and I did whatever she did. But her love language is words of affirmation. So she really needed me or needs me to tell her that I love her, to tell her good things about herself. And when I, once I realized that and was able to make that change, we have a much deeper, closer, intimate connection as mother and daughter. And so being, you know, for us being able to communicate that was huge. But in relationships, I can't tell you how many people cross my path and say, I never even heard of love languages. And I, you know, I was married for 20 years and I've been divorced for 20 years or just whatever the case may be. But it really is important for us to communicate well and to be open to loving people the way they needed to be loved.
If you have a question,
have more than one love language?
I'm sorry, I said that again.
Can a person have more than one love language?
Yes. Typically, people have two and are tied in some areas. So, like gifts and physical touch is mine. I'm tied in both of those areas. But when if you go to the website, 5lovelanguages.com, you can actually pull up the test and take the test, and it'll tell you. And now my aunt, when she took it, hers was tied evenly for all five. So... I mean, and she's 86 years old. She's walking. She's healthy. She's, you know, still going out doing stuff. But she's one of the happiest people that I know. And I think it probably is because she's able to experience love and connection and validation from different people in so many different ways. And so, but yes, you definitely can.
If you have a question or comment, press 1. We already have a caller. Let's see. Welcome to Black Urban America, 1130.
1139.
Oh, excuse me, 1139. Go ahead.
Not a problem. Thank you for, you know, allowing me on the air tonight. Hope you guys are having a wonderful time. And I did have a question. My first question was answered already about having multiple love languages. I guess... as far as, you know, being told, you know, I love you and being like words of affirmation, being told, you know, positive things of that nature, I guess from your experience or through the research you have done, I guess, how much do you think that affects the Black community? And like just to kind of make my question a little bit more clear. I know for me, like, I love be told I love you. I say I'm very in tune with my feelings, but a lot of times I get that, you know, I'm just too emotional or I'm too sensitive. I guess, like, what is your take on that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I agree with you 100%. I think that in the Black community, we are told, but again, remember, like I said at the beginning, we have been trained to be unkind to ourselves, especially as Black people, and unkind to each other. So that's why even with just with a typical Black business, we're able to be so patient with McDonald's and Wendy's and all these other places. But when it comes to a Black business, we, you know, something happened and we cough. But I think you're 100% correct. You know, a lot of times people will tell a Black man that he's too sensitive or too whatever because society doesn't consider you human. Society doesn't think that you should even feel. Society doesn't think that you should have emotions. So that's why as Black people, when we're in a relationship, we literally got to love the hell out of each other. We have to be committed to being caring, to being extra compassionate, to really be focused on learning how to listen, learning how to love each other in our designated love languages, learning how to communicate and just really cherish each other. Because if we don't do it for ourselves, nobody else is going to do it. You already see they can put it. They can put on TV, on video, somebody with their knee on your neck and still got to wonder if, did you really die? And literally have 40 expert witnesses to say, well, yeah, I think he dead. Or, you know, I think that this guy may kill them. I mean, it's crazy. And so you get so many signals from so many different places to really suggest to you that black life and black love is just not important, and black men don't matter, and black people don't matter. So we got to fight back, you know, against all of that. But I really think that that begins in the home, and I honestly believe that it begins in the bedroom. We got to be able to honor each other in the bedroom, to love each other, and just make sure that we're meeting each other's needs there first. But thank you for the question. That was a good question.
Yeah, thank you, caller. Do you think people, well, men, do you think men feel that being intimate is weak?
A lot of times, yes, because, you know, just like the caller just said, because we're socialized to believe that being close and being caring and being sensitive and being compassionate is something that we just should do as black people, especially not to one another. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you're 100% right. People do consider it a sign of weakness, but you know, we got to just know in our own relationships that our strength is being able to be weak to one another. And another word for weak that we use synonymously in the Bible is submission. That means one person is the stronger person, the other person is the weaker person in that moment. And so we have to be able to be weak in certain, you know, in a sense, to our partners, to our spouses in a relationship. That's super important.
So do you feel black relationships are successful?
Well, I mean, black people divorce at the same rate, you know, for the most part, that the other people divorce, so which is about 50%. But I think we could be more successful if we had the tools that we really needed, that we really need to have to maintain a strong relationship. And even in the book, in one chapter, I dedicate a whole chapter just to listening. And believe it or not, when the feedback that I get from most men, that's their favorite part of the book, not the part of the book that's talking about why men need oral sex, but it's the part on listening, because I ask the question, when have you ever been taught to listen? Now, we always hear about how important it is to communicate in relationships, and most relationships fail because of the lack of communication. But listening is an important part of communication. And if you look at it, think about how many times you've been taught to listen in elementary school. And then write that number down, and then write down the number of times you've been taught to listen in middle school and in high school and in college, how many classes did you take on listening. And then at work, how many times have you been trained to listen and actually understanding the different phases of listening, different parts of listening, the process of listening, active listening versus passive listening, and how to summarize and how to rephrase. And the answer for most people is never, and you get a real big zero for that listening score. And so we really have to be compassionate with ourselves and be honest to say, I mean, I may be the problem in my relationship, you know, if I don't know how to listen. So, you know, there may be some work that I need to do. And a lot of people are coming to the book and leaving away from it really appreciative of that piece. But, yeah, I completely agree with you.
Okay. Well, we go to this next caller. After this next caller, I know Michonne is going to have more questions for you. If you have a comment or a question, please press 1. You're on the air, 5240.
Yes, hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Yes, this is a good topic, and I got to look more deep into that book, and I believe I get it, but I just wanted to think back on the last callers. I know in the African American community, what you're saying, and I know growing up in the inner city, when you position yourself to have feelings or to care about the females, they will simply tell you, and I've been told this before years ago, that don't be so damn sensitive in your feelings about whatever. So when you want to be sensitive to the female, you want to be nice and respectful, it's just like you get a pushback as being soft, weak, and then you see the guys around, there's a dog in the eye to run the train, or she respect them more. So that's always been in the black community, and it's still in the black community real heavy. But, you know, so as a young man and been taught by older black guys at the time that was out there, you know, selling drugs, doing whatever they were doing, they was like, man, you can't put no feelings. You just got to, you know, hit it and quit it or whatever. You can't put no feelings with them because when you do that, they look at you as a weaker vessel instead of you saying, and I've been, two women told me that, nah, don't come with that love fuck shit. Don't come with that, man. Just hit me and whatever, man. I ain't talking about physical hit. I mean bedroom stuff and all that, that smoke and all that. So A lot of young men, they're growing up with that same mentality, man, where you can't put no feelings in it. And then, you know, you got black guys that just want to marry women that's on, like, YouTube, and the women shut them down, and they got flowers, and the women turn them off because they want to be in the streets or whatever. So, you know, so now as an African-American, like I told my nephew here, you want to show feelings, but then you always got to have your guard up, like, nah, man, I can't do this because once I do this and let it down, she going to look at me as the weaker person.
Right. Yeah, and I think that goes back to, that's a really good point, and I think that goes back to what the sister said earlier about, you know, how we are just kind of desensitized to each other's needs. But it goes back to trauma. And what happens is, and let me just give you my take on why some women are like that. If you look historically through the lineage of black women, what we've had to endure is seeing our men taken away from us, which means literally, you know, sold into different places. And literally we had to pick up the pieces. Because they aren't able to get the job, and now they aren't able to get the job. A lot of black men can't provide. And so black women have had to take on this mantle of strength. So we have to kind of do everything. We the breadwinner, we cook it, we clean it, we bring it home. And
yeah,
so we don't even have time a lot of times with black women to even process our own feelings. And then, you know, like we've established before, we get other subliminal messages from all over that tell us that we should not feel. And so we have what is called trauma. And trauma that's unchecked, it continues to perpetuate, and it hurts more people and hurts more people, and we never get help. Now, the American Medical Association and the American Psychological Association, that's the association who actually says, you know, you're bipolar or schizophrenic or whatever, both those two organizations said that racism causes trauma. Now, if racism causes trauma and racism never ended, we have a lot of traumatized people in our community trying to love each other, and we just don't have the tools to do that. So it's not that black women want to hate black men. We want to love each other. We just don't know how to do it. So that's why I came out with this book, and I really hope that people will use it so we can make that connection.
Well, can you be – I'm sorry, Michonne. I know I said good, but just a question popped up in my head. Can you go through the drama, T-R-A-U-M-A, can you go through this drama and where is the difficulty in showing intimacy while you have all of this drama and being dramatized in your community, facing this racism? When do you have the energy? Where does this intimacy energy come from? Because you still have couples that have been married for 30 years.
Yeah, but what you have to do is just to be intentional with healing yourself. And, you know, and I try to normalize the concept of going to get therapy and going to get help. Because what we know now from whether it's alcoholism or any drug addiction, emotional problems that people have, that stuff, that trauma is passed down on the cellular level. Literally, it lives in the cells of your body. So if you have been black in America all this time and your mama never got counseling and your dad and your granddaddy never got in, or your great grandmama or who, through your whole lineage since they were ripped off the shores, then you're carrying pain and trauma from being kidnapped, beaten, raped, molested, all that stuff, even if that's never been your own experience. But yes, trauma is real, and we you know, we have to find time to address it. You make time and you find time for what's important.
At one time, Dr. Bishop, God, therapy was also a taboo subject in our community. It's just like in the past 20 years, I say that last 20 years that therapy has been accepted in our community, and more people are going to counseling to address their inner issues.
Right, absolutely. Because to me, it still is very taboo. You know, a lot of people that I know who need it will say that they don't want to get it. And they were like, would you go to therapy? And I'm still, well, actually, yes, I have a therapist. And my daughter has a therapist, and we go on a regular basis. And then we have a family therapist. And, you know, I mean, to me, it's normal because you would go to an optometrist if you're having some discomfort with your eyes, and you would go to a podiatrist if you're having discomfort with your feet, and you would go to your general practitioner if you're having some discomfort in your body. So if you're having discomfort in your emotions and in your mind, why not go see a therapist? That's what they're there for. And but yeah, you're 100% right. It's very very taboo in the Black community. But I'm doing my best to try to normalize it. Don't put a call.
Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay, 1139 has another question or comment. Can you put them back on?
Hey, how are you guys doing again?
Hello.
Awesome, thank you.
Awesome. I mean, I think so far, you know, I'm really enjoying this. I know, like, when I had asked my question, you had went into a conversation. I had, like, a follow-up question to what you were saying back then, but you're not trying to, like, take us all the way back. But, like, I know you were talking about heavily, like, relationships and, like, you know, in the bedroom and things of that nature. Can you, like, what if you know, a person doesn't have the same needs as others?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that has to be discussed in each relationship. Every relationship is going to be different, just like each individual is going to be different. And I really reiterate in the book for men to understand.
What's the title? I missed the beginning. I apologize. I did come in late. Can you, like, give out the title of your book? Because I would love to read it.
Yes, it's The Answers to Intimacy, Why Men Need Oral Sex and Women Need to Talk. And I'll post it on Brother Ken's page, too, so you can see what it looks like. And I've seen the link to the website.
Yeah. Is it on Amazon or where did we bought it?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon.
Perfect.
You're welcome.
No, I'm listening. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, but I was just saying everybody's going to be different. So each man is going to need something different because, again, it's about how powerful he actually feels. And a lot of times the only place where a Black man can feel powerful is in his home and in his bedroom. And so a man can be a janitor and feel very powerful, and he may not need oral sex or even care about it. But then you could have somebody that's President Obama, and that may be something that he does need. So it's just going to be – it's different for different people. And let me just also say on the flip side of that, because we didn't have a chance to talk about why women need to talk, but that woman is going to has a need to talk because if you think about Black women, we typically are the ones who are at a company.
Do all the talking.
We've trained.
Black women do all the talking.
We need to talk. You know, but –
Boy,
do
y'all need to talk.
Yes. And we're there. We trained everybody.
Thank you
to see everybody
the
promoted
it.
And all this stuff. So, but because we feel slighted so often, and we feel like so much is happening to us and around us, we need to express it. We need to get it off our chest. And so it's not that women just like to talk. It's a need. It's a deep, it's a real need to talk and need to express ourselves. And so if a woman has the opportunity to do that, and she feels heard and validated and important and listened to, then she's going to go into the bedroom and give you whatever you need as somebody who has done that for her, who's validated her and who's listened to her and who's heard her. And so, but often that just doesn't happen in relationships. And then that's why we have the huge breakdown.
Okay. Go ahead, Michonne.
Do Black women need to adjust their standards when love comes knocking?
In terms of what?
Of
relationship, because, you know, a lot of times, especially this day and age, there are more educated black women. Black women are getting more degrees and trying to find love or a mate. Just, okay, for instance, say if it's a black woman who has a master's degree or a PhD, and she meets somebody who, say he's a plumber.
Okay.
Do you think it's harder for them to find love if they're expecting somebody on the same educational level? Because that plumber could make just as much money as they do, actually.
Right, right, right. And I'm going to say not necessarily. I think every black woman is a queen, and she should have what she absolutely wants, and that she should not have to adjust her standards. But I do think that she needs to do work first and be really honest with herself about who she is as it's related to her past, her pain, and her trauma. She has to be honest about who she is, what she wants, and why. And I think being honest about those things is going to adjust who she's going to attract and desire. Because the more work we do on ourselves, the more we change and the more we grow. And we say, oh, okay, well, I'm open to this. You know, I'm this plumber now that I may not have been open to. I'm open to this formerly incarcerated man who's come and started a business and, you know, done well for himself or, you know, whatever the case may be. So I think once we really begin with doing that real work, sitting down with ourselves, dealing with our trauma, being honest about who we are and who we're not, and having that real talk with ourselves, then we'll be able to attract who we really need to and not have to adjust our standards.
What are the psychological needs in a relationship?
Oh, wow, that's a good one. Well, of course, it's going to be different for everybody, but I think all people, regardless of your ethnic background and your socioeconomic status, all people in a relationship are going to psychologically are going to experience some kind of hardship in life. And so I think everybody needs to be committed to working through that through a therapist. And I think that's a psychological need in a relationship that everybody has and that most people neglect. And, you know, a lot of couples only will go to counseling, that like the premarital counseling before they get married. And then, you know, maybe when stuff goes wrong, but instead of really kind of like incorporating it into just a regular daily practice. And I had a conversation with my own pastor before about my disappointment in not in just our church, but in the body of Christ as a whole. I'm a believer, but, you know, just as a whole, because I kind of feel like a lot of people just don't put their money where their mouth is when it comes to really knowing and understanding that the black family is a foundation of the community. And so I really think we should see a lot of church budgets that have a lot of money going toward that marriage ministry and that marriage counseling and encouraging people, hey, let's come in, let's talk monthly, you know, do monthly maintenance on your marriage. I think that's important. And, yeah, so that's a huge psychological need, I think, because especially as black folks, because we go through so much. And we, you know, we need to talk about it. We need to have strategies on how we're going to deal individually, how we're going to deal with this as a couple and as a family. And, you know, being black ain't easy. And we need as many tools and resources as we can get. That's a great question. Thank you.
You're welcome. You did touch on this some, but what is the connection between the racism, oppression, and sexual expression?
So most for men, the only place that you can feel powerful, or for all men, regardless of ethnic background or socioeconomic status, regardless of who you are, all men need to feel powerful. That's a scientific fact. That's just biology, physiology, all of that stuff rolled into one. But and so for black men, that a lot of that's taken away. And, you know, black men are emasculated through racism and through oppression. So if you're oppressed and not able to have the job you want, the house you want, the credit score you really deserve, because you're black, or you know, you pulled over all the time because you're black. All of that stuff weighs on the psyche of a black man. And it continues to further and further and further push him down and emasculate him when he knows that he should be making as much as his wife, but he makes less. And, you know, all those things really add in to emasculate a black man. And so, again, he's feeling more and more and more powerless. And so when he goes around and he's feeling powerless because of racism and because of oppression, then the only place that's left in the whole world where he really can feel powerful and feel like a king is in his bedroom. And so the only person that really can give him that satisfaction of feeling powerful and feeling like somebody, you know, like, you know, somebody is vulnerable to me is his wife or his partner. You know, that's it. And so that's the connection between racism. And it's powerful because racism literally affects every single aspect of your life, including the bedroom. It's unbelievable because, again, you know, what we experience sexually is begins in our minds first, and that's where racism works.
Dr. Bishop, why is it that this, like, we all know about racism. I mean, you have to be, you know, deaf, dumb, and blind not to know about racism in America. But why is this aspect of racism is kept from us? Like a good education is kept from black children in the city. Why is this aspect kept from us? And maybe if more people knew about this, maybe we wouldn't have so much divorce rates or problems in relationships in our communities.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if people did understand it, that they would work harder and wouldn't divorce. But I think it's mainly because the research, the dots hadn't been connected before, and the research hadn't been done. And or maybe it had been, and I just didn't know about it. But so that's why I wanted to do it, and I connected those dots. But it's just the research just is not out there. And so people don't know. People can't do what they don't know. And so,
right.
Yeah, so that's why I'm just really trying to push it because I really want black folks to stay together.
Now, you speak of submission, right, as a part of intimacy.
Yes.
Do you think that
yes.
submission could mean a loss of independence?
Well, I guess it would depend on what kind of relationship you're in. I really believe that when you submit to somebody, that you're allowing them to be strong in that moment and you're willing to be weak. And I think that giving over your will is an act of strength, even though it looks like weakness. So it takes a lot for me to submit. And if you have to be strong to submit or even to be meek, you know, as the Bible would say, you have to be strong in order to be able to do that. And it can look like weakness, but I think you have to be strong to be able to do it.
Well, Dr. Bishop, I'm going to say something. We have a lot of black independent women in this country. And when you speak of that word submission, I don't think a lot of black independent women going to come around to that. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think I definitely agree, but I think what happens is a lot of women don't even understand why they are the way they are. They don't understand that they are they carry a lot of masculine energy, and a part of not being willing to submit is masculine because of, again, you know, like men they're strong. They don't always like to come across as a weaker vessel in any way. But
just like the caller said, just like the caller earlier said, you know, we are raised, whether it's in the streets or in the homes, you better not be weak and you better not give in to whomever.
Yeah, and because we are products of racism and just are just mis educated in so many different ways, and we never, a lot of times, we don't really stop to ask why we're doing what we're doing. But let me just kind of put in context a little bit why a lot of that stuff comes from. You have to remember, we are only about four generations removed from Black women seeing the children that they cared for 9 months and raised for a few years being snatched out of their arms and sold to somebody that they may never see, to some far place, and they may never see that child again. And,
right.
And they still have to work, and they still have to have sex with Massa, and they still have to pick cotton, and still have to. And so, again, that causes trauma. That trauma is stored in a cellular level in somebody's body and passed on. And so, and then, but still that physical behavior of, you know, I'm just not going to be willing to be connected to somebody emotionally, that's where that comes from. That's literally where it comes from. But because we have so many generations of people who never sat down to think about that and who have never gotten help, treatment, or anything for that, it's been normalized in our community, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's one of the, I call it collateral damage. It's some of that collateral damage from slavery that never, that's never been addressed. And we got to stop doing that.
Dr. Joy speaks about that. Dr. Joy speaks about that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So let me ask you this. What should Black love look like there between a Black man and a Black woman?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Because we got different types of relationships now in 2021. So I really want to be specific. So what should Black love look like between a Black man and a Black woman?
Well, it's about being honest, being committed, being respectful, and just being as compassionate as we possibly can toward one another. To me, that's what Black love is. And, you know, if that's the root, and if we can encourage each other to really stay committed to being compassionate, I think really compassion is the key, because we are inundated with so many messages that we should not be compassionate to one another, and that we shouldn't be compassionate to ourselves, especially as Black women. We are not always kind to ourselves, and our self-talk is not always good. And I always tell people, look at how somebody talks about themselves, and that's eventually, if you're in a relationship with them long-term down the line, that's how they're going to talk about you. So encourage, or if they mistreat themselves and don't take time to do what they need to do for themselves, you know, encourage your partner, your spouse to do that, because we got to love ourselves first. But we've been conditioned and reinforced and even rewarded for not loving ourselves and for not loving each other. But Black love is about being very compassionate and being respectful and kind and caring, and it's the foundation of the community.
Okay. Now, you said honesty, compassion, commitment, and what's the last one? Look at those three. Let's look at those three. Do you think that, let's say, well, all ages really, do you think that people are really being honest and committed towards each other today? Do you think that will ever happen? Because I see a lot of dishonesty in relationships. I'm not talking about marriage. I'm talking about relationships and everything. Do you see the necessary compassion? For example, I hear Black women call their boyfriends or husband, that's my, the N-word. That's my, you know, do you think that's compassion? Do you think that's love? Will you call you man a slave characteristic or adjective?
Well, I think a lot of times, you know, it just comes from, that kind of thing comes from people just really not knowing better. And not that they don't care, but I think they just don't know. And so we really have to, again, be compassionate and make sure that we are educating one another around what love should sound like, what love should look like, what love should feel like. Because, again, we're talking about a generation of people who historically have been beaten and mutilated and brutalized and never gotten help for it. So mistreating each other and speaking ill of one another is what the norm is. And so until we learn that what we've become accustomed to but what our norm is not normal and is not healthy and is not okay, then we can't grow until we learn those things. But so it takes people like the powerful Brother Kenneth Jones and his We Talk Productions and other huge platforms like this to help to educate people on what love should look like, sound like, feel like, all those things.
Go ahead, Ms. Sean.
Okay. Do you believe in the concept of a soulmate?
I think that's a made up term that don't exist. No, I'm just joking. No, go ahead. Y'all go ahead and talk, girl. Talk. Go ahead.
You know, I'm for sure. I think that there are so many different people that you can be in a relationship with and have a great relationship as long as you have, you know, you're on the same page. You have purpose for that relationship and you agree to have respect and compassion. But no, I think some, you can be deeply connected to some people on a really deep level. But I don't think that if you're with somebody for 20 years and then he has a car accident and he dies and you'll never find love again, I don't think that it's just one person for everybody and, you know, and that's it. And I think it's a lot of different people that can love you the way that you want to be loved. And I think that that's a part of who God is when he made us in his image. And I think that that's a part of his kindness and loving and compassion for us, that he made somebody that's going to be able to love you no matter what, even if one person dies or if one person leaves or like me, I'm divorced, but I still believe I can definitely find love again, you know, all those kinds of things. But I think it's a lot of people that can love you. And they're going to love you so right, you're going to be like, yeah, that's my soulmate.
Okay, how can a person increase their chances of finding love?
Good luck.
You definitely can find love. I think you have to, I really believe in being what you want to attract. And so I really think working on yourself first is the most important thing that you need to do in order to attract who you really want to have and who you really deserve. Because once you really start healing those parts of yourself that you may not even realize are broken, you're really sitting down and doing work and research on your family history and your lineage, you'll learn about different things you may be carrying you're not aware of. And then once you really grow and once you heal, you'll attract other people who are also healed and who will be able to love you in the right way. And so I absolutely believe in love. I love love. Like, out of all the people that I know, I'm always the person who is finding people and hooking folks up and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's me. So my next business is going to be a matchmaking service because I love, love, I love doing stuff like that.
Dr. Bishop, do you think, really, the way things are and the way we treat each other, do you think black folks really know about love? They say, I love you, I love you, but their action speaks differently. Or that's my man, I love my man, and you know, you're shy. You know, so do black folks really know about love?
Yes, we do. I think we love it. I think we are the most loving people on the planet.
I should say know about love. Do we know how to show love? Now, knowing about something and showing is two different actions.
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you on that, but I think that we know how to love, but we also are deeply, deeply traumatized. I really believe that, and I really believe that we need help because the love, a lot of times the love that we have and that we want to give, we don't even know how to give it because we're so deeply damaged and deeply wounded. And so we have to heal ourselves and sit down and talk about the things that's hurting us and why we may lash out and why we may behave the way we behave. Because, again, a lot of times we do stuff, you know, like you said, using the N-word, doing other stuff that we think is loving, and it's just not. Or, like, I'm a teacher. I teach children. I teach high school students, and I teach adults. But, even just teaching students how a lot of parents really believe that yelling and screaming and cussing and calling their kid all kinds of things, they believe that that is love, and it's just not. So,
and also,
you know, and out of
also, they're learning how to learn. They are getting the wrong definition of love from wrong sources like media. Like
absolutely
mass media.
Absolutely. And let me just, I agree with you, definitely. And let me just go back to what the sister was saying, because I don't know if I finished answering the other part of the question. What I did want to say is that I do believe in being able to find love or relationships or connections on online dating. I did online dating before, and I loved it. I met some really great people. But you know what I also learned is that I'm just, at the time, I just really wasn't ready for a relationship. But I met great people. And so I think trying online dating is great. I think asking people to introduce you to folks is great. Meeting people at different, I love sports, so different sporting events, you know, is great. But I definitely think it's so many people out there that are looking for love, you know. So I think everybody can find the love that they want.
Okay. We have time for one more question. Michonne, I'm going to ask you to ask the last question of our guests before we leave.
Okay. How do you know when a man is falling in love with you?
Oh, Lord.
I'm sorry.
Now, I don't know.
I don't mean to laugh. I don't think this is funny. I really don't think this is funny. It just triggered some laughter in me. That's all.
Go ahead and laugh. It doesn't bother me at all.
I think Brother Kid Jones may be the expert on that one. I'm not sure, but I will say I
oh, no, I'm not
in,
expert
on
that one. I'm not too good. I never, my history shows. You talked about history before. Nah, I'm not really too good. I never was.
Okay. Well, I have another question. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a close friend that needs to move forward from a past relationship. And actually, it's been like last week, maybe 2 years that her husband had passed away. How can someone like move forward from, you know, that type of, you know, it wasn't like they just broke up, but, you know, something happened. He passed away, got sick. And how does the person move on, you know, try to go on with their life?
That's
dealing
tough.
With that grief.
Yeah, that's very tough. Well, first, my condolences to your friend. That's heartbreaking. But I think definitely going to counseling, getting therapy, and then just kind of being committed to therapy. And let me say this, too, because a lot of times people be like, yeah, I went to counseling, and they went once. You know, yeah, but your husband died or your child died. Going once is not going to get it. Like, you need to be going weekly for the next few years. But so let me just say that piece. I definitely think we need to that she could get help in that way with therapy. But also, it just takes time, you know, and she'll just have to do it in her own time and being able to get back out and going places with you and other friends. You know, eventually being able to meet people and just talk to folks and stuff like that and chat, maybe even on just on Facebook. But it just takes time to heal.
Yes, one day at a time. Well, I thank you, Dr. Bishop, for coming on the show. I really enjoyed this conversation. And I'd like to thank you, Sean.
Thank you for having me.
Huh?
I said thank you for having me. I enjoyed it, too.
No problem. And I hope to invite you back, too. Well, that's all, ladies and gentlemen, for another week. I thank you for your questions. And listen to tomorrow with the Cutting Edge with Michonne. And you only got a couple seconds. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.
Good night.